This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Trump meets with Putin. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka on this Monday, July 16. Thanks for joining us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump's trip through Europe continues today in Finland, where he sits down with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Here, what's on the agenda?
Chicago police have released video that they say shows a man who was shot and killed by officers, broke away from them, and then reached for a gun.
In sports, France beats Croatia for its second World Cup trophy, and Novak Djokovic captured his fourth Wimbledon.
And the state's unprepared for the next economic slowdown, with lack of funding for things like unemployment benefits.
Over the course of this expansion here, where the economy has done really well, you would have thought that states would have taken advantage to, sort of shore up their rainy day funds, get ready for the next downturn. By and large, in a number of places, that hasn't been what's happened.
Wall Street Journal reporter David Harrison identifies those that are prepared and unprepared for the next downturn in the economy. His report in about 10 minutes. President Trump meets this morning with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Helsinki, Finland. Mr. Trump's top aides say the goal is to open a conversation. The president tweeted this morning that our relationship with Russia has never been worse, and he blamed it on what he called years of U.S. foolishness and stupidity. He sought to lower expectations during an interview with CBS News.
I don't expect anything. I frankly don't expect. I go in with very low expectations. I think that getting along with Russia is a good thing, but it's possible we won't.
U.S. lawmakers want the president to press the case against Mr. Putin for meddling in the 2016 elections. 3 days ago, special counsel Robert Mueller indicted a dozen Russian intelligence officers on charges of hacking into Democratic Party servers. The agenda includes Syria, where the White House wants Russia's help in scaling back Iran's role, and Ukraine, where efforts to get Moscow to reverse its occupation of Crimea and intervention in eastern Ukraine have failed. More about what the two leaders will discuss from this morning's Mike Gavin.
In addition to Syria, Ukraine, and Crimea, the new START treaty is expected to be a topic. The agreement sets a limit of 1,550 strategic warheads and bombs that are deployed and is due to expire in 3 years. It can be renewed for 5 years if both men agree. The Wall Street Journal says the two sides could also revive strategic stability talks about nuclear doctrine and programs. Russia suspended those talks earlier this year after the U.S. canceled consultations with Moscow on cybersecurity. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. 9 minutes after the hour. Footage from body cameras and other surveillance video appeared to show that a man who was shot and killed by a Chicago police officer was armed with a gun and reached toward it as officers confronted him. Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson said 37-year-old Harith Augustus had a holstered semi-automatic handgun tucked into his waistband when officers confronted him on the city's south side. A report says he broke free and ran from the officers, who believed he appeared to be reaching for a weapon, and then officers shot him.
To the family of Mr. Augustus, I offer you my sincerest condolences for your loss, especially as a parent, as a father.
His death led to protests Saturday night. Four protesters were arrested after scuffles broke out. Meanwhile, three cops in Kansas City, Missouri, were shot yesterday in a standoff. The gunman was killed. And in Massachusetts, a police officer in Weymouth, outside Boston, was shot and killed by a suspect who is under arrest. It is 10 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. We'd like to welcome a new sponsor to the show, Untuck It. You know, it's never a good look when you untuck a long, bulky dress shirt. Untuck It makes shirts specifically designed to be worn untucked. A casual shirt that's not too long and not too short. It's just right. And not only do they look good, they feel great. And if you're a woman, by the way, wishing you can have one of these, well, Untuck It now makes shirts for women, too. Log on to untuckit.com and check out all the new arrivals. Use the promo code GORDONDEAL for 20% off your entire purchase. You can also visit one of Untuckit's over 25 retail locations across the country. Untuckit.com, your solution to perfecting casual. Use the promo code GORDONDEAL for 20% savings. Again, untuckit.com and use the promo code GORDONDEAL for 20% savings. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. Many U.S. states have been slow to improve their finances 9 years into the economic expansion. Wall Street Journal reporter David Harrison says that raises a risk they won't be prepared when another downturn hits, making them susceptible to big spending cuts that make the next recession worse. David, what have you uncovered?
Well, it seems that over the course of this expansion here, where the economy has done really well, you would have thought that states would have taken advantage to, sort of shore up their rainy day funds, get ready for the next downturn. By and large, in a number of places, that hasn't been what's happened. There's been about 21 states we found actually have a smaller rainy day fund now than they did before the recession. And that's something that's really kind of starting to concern the folks who watch this closely. I mean, they're starting to say that, another recession is coming. We don't know when. We don't know how. But the way these things work is, yes, recessions do seem to come. There is a cycle, and when that happens, a lot of these states won't be prepared. And the question is, what are they going to do?
All right. So, what has happened that they are unable to, or perhaps unwilling, to replace those rainy day funds? Did the money just not come back in the way many were hoping or expecting it would?
Well, that's part of it, yeah. So, revenues, what happens with states is that their revenues are very cyclical. So when the economy does poorly, people lose their jobs and that kind of thing. It means lower revenues for states because they get a lot of their revenues from things like income taxes and sales taxes. So what's happened is that, in the recession, yes, their revenues took a great big hit, and they've come back quite a bit since then. The problem is they haven't really come back enough. They haven't come back at the same to the same. They haven't come back as strongly as they did in previous recessions, and there are a number of reasons for that. And a big one is that we're not buying things in stores so much anymore. We're buying things online, and we're buying more services as opposed to goods, which means we're paying less in sales tax. And sales tax is a great big revenue source for states. So if we pay less in sales tax, that means less money for states. That means they have less revenue coming in, and that means they have less to save. So all these things are sort of connected. It's a number of things that, not, states don't necessarily always have perfect control over these things, but that's kind of ended up in a situation where, as we are now, where they may not really be in good shape.
Wow. What are some of the states in really bad positions?
Well, so a number of them that have had a really tough time are sort of the big energy and gas producing states, because there the revenue sources are really volatile. So, North Dakota, Wyoming, they were doing well when prices were high, and they've been hurt when prices are low. So those are the ones that really are having a lot of trouble. And then there are other places, sort of the big ones that everybody talks about, like Illinois and New Jersey, which have had a number of issues. In New Jersey, I thought was really quite striking. They emptied out their rainy day fund in 2009 in the recession, which, is normal. You'd expect them to do that. They need the money to pay for services. The problem was, since then, they haven't put a penny back into it. Their rainy day fund is still empty. And, here we are 9 years later, and you would have thought that they would have found a way to replenish it, but they haven't.
We're proud of the way we do things in New Jersey.
Right.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter David Harrison. He's written a piece entitled, "Many States Are Likely Unprepared for Next Downturn." And he's talking about how far behind some states are in replenishing those rainy day funds that they used during the recession. And as you point out, too, the federal government this time may not be in much of a position to help.
Yeah, that's right. So usually what happens in recessions is the federal government steps in to help state governments. See, the difference is state governments, a lot of them, I think all but one, are constitutionally required to have a balanced budget. So they can't, they can't run deficits, which is not the case, as we know, for the federal government. The federal government can run deficits, as far as the eye can see. So what happens is in recessions, the federal government kind of steps in. They're able to provide money to state governments to keep them afloat. That may not be the case this time around.
Right. So what's worst case scenario here for these states that have minimal or zero rainy day funds?
Well, I mean, that's hard to say. What could happen is, you know, the federal government could in fact step in and tide them over, which, you know, could have all sorts of consequences. Or, as you said, the worst case scenario is that people just suffer. I mean, there's just less money going around, so you have to put in place these really drastic cuts. We saw in the last recession the number of cuts to essential services like education, both K-12 and higher ed, and that caused a lot of consternation back in 2009, 2010, and we could see more of the same.
Thanks, David. Wall Street Journal reporter David Harrison. It's 20 minutes after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
President Trump and Russia's Vladimir Putin are ready to go one-on-one in a summit that plays out against a backdrop of fraying Western alliances and a new peak in the investigation into Russian election meddling. Today's meeting has been condemned in advance by an assortment of members of Congress from both parties after the U.S. indictment last week of 12 Russian military intelligence officers accused of hacking Democrats in the 2016 election to help Trump's presidential campaign. Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy of South Carolina spoke with CBS.
I would ask the president to give some serious consideration. Your first request of Vladimir Putin needs to be, tell us which airport we can pick up the 25 Russians that tried to interfere with the fundamentals of our democracy.
On the eve of his meeting with Putin, Trump rattled allies once again by labeling the European Union a foe with regard to trade. In an interview with CBS, Trump lumped the EU with China and Russia as U.S. economic adversaries. A wildfire that has killed a California firefighter is growing quickly and forced the closure of a key route into Yosemite National Park as crews contend with sweltering conditions. CAL FIRE Unit Chief Nancy Korprich says everyone is mourning the death of 36-year-old heavy fire equipment operator Braden Barney, who was killed Saturday.
Braden is survived by his mom, Lynn, his wife, Jessica, his a small baby girl, Malia, and son, Nolan, at 5 and 3.
The fire that broke out Friday has scorched nearly 7 square miles and forced the evacuation of the Yosemite Cedar Lodge. The U.S. and North Korea held talks yesterday to discuss the return of more than 5,000 remains of U.S. service members still missing from the Korean War. The discussions follow a commitment made by the North during the June summit in Singapore to recover the remains of U.S. prisoners of war and those missing in action. In a statement, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo called the talks productive but gave no specific date for a transfer.
A last look at the watch from referee Nestor Pitana. A final whistle. France have won the World Cup.
20 years and 3 days since the last one. France won the World Cup, topping Croatia yesterday 4-2 after a tight first half gave way to an explosive second. It was the highest scoring final since 1966.
That was a very, very entertaining World Cup. Did you watch yesterday or no?
I was selling cats yesterday.
Legitimately, not black market stuff here. This is like legit cat sales.
Yes.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you do, by the way?
Sold one.
Did that exceed or beat expectations?
It was pretty poor day. It was
poor day.
Yeah.
Sort of like Croatia. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour. If you have visited a restaurant in recent months, there's a good chance you've learned about the new enemy that has emerged in the fight against plastic waste, and that's the single-use plastic straw. But we have a longer history in this country of banning similar products, and it's tied to fighting the spread of disease. More from MarketWatch reporter Maria LaMagna. Maria, explain.
So going way back, you know, some of the first disposable, you know, plates and cups were because, as you mentioned, it was actually to prevent the spread of diseases. And so in the early 1900s, when people were struggling with diseases like cholera and diphtheria and other things, tuberculosis, I think, was another problem. People were drinking out of common spaces like fountains, you know, actually dipping a ladle into a fountain and using it repeatedly. And so a lawyer actually just decided to develop a single-use paper cup, and that company eventually became Dixie Cup, the brand that we probably all know. So it actually started as something to be more sanitary and not necessarily to be more convenient, which is what a lot of people associate, you know, paper plates and cups with now.
That's interesting. In fact, boy, Dixie Cup, I mean, became like a Kleenex and Xerox, right, in terms of brand popularity.
Totally, yes. It's very recognizable.
Wow. What else here? How about the history?
Then, you know, it kind of didn't really explode until the 1960s, these kinds of disposable containers for food. You know, the U.S. started using plastic in a lot more ways during World War II, and so that kind of spread to the food service industry after that. So in the 1960s, it became really popular as takeaway food, even at places like McDonald's, became more and more widespread. It became kind of necessary to have some kind of delivery mechanism to take it home with. But then in the 1960s, at the same time, people also started becoming more aware of pollution and more conscious about the environment in general. So it was kind of two things going on at the same time. And then by the 1970s and 80s, there was more backlash and people thinking more seriously about recycling and trying to cut down on their consumption of these kinds of products. But as we know, it's actually still growing, even though people may say that they're more aware. You know, the share of plastics in solid waste that, you know, cities actually collect, the part that was plastic was just less than 1% in 1960, and it's grown to more than 10%. So we definitely are using a lot more plastic than ever before.
How about that? Wow, we're speaking with MarketWatch personal finance reporter Maria LaMagna. She's written a piece about banning plastic straws and has a little bit of history of banning plastic packaging in this country. So where are we with the straws right now? This really seems to have some downhill momentum.
Yes. So, you know, we've seen some really major companies like Starbucks, Royal Caribbean, the cruise line, say that they're going to phase out plastic straws. Starbucks just this week talked about a new reusable lid that they're going to introduce, and they're going to eliminate all single-use plastic straws by 2020. So that's a pretty major announcement, and it seems like a lot of companies are kind of getting on board because certain companies are getting positive publicity from this, and so other companies are kind of wanting to join in and say, we're getting rid of straws too. So we may see it become more and more, you know, prevalent that you won't be given a straw. Entire cities are actually saying that plastic straws are not okay. Seattle, Miami Beach, San Luis Obispo, California are just a few of them. So it's becoming actually pretty mainstream now.
Market Watch reporter Maria LaMagna. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday, July 16. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Trump and Putin hold a formal meeting in Finland. Raging wildfire near Yosemite National Park has killed a firefighter. Chinese economy met growth expectations in the second quarter, but was the slowest pace since 2016. Former FBI lawyer Lisa Page, an anti-Trump texter, testifies behind closed doors with the House Judiciary Committee today. Today is Amazon Prime Day and the brewery that created a special beer for the Trump-Putin summit. That story in about 20 minutes. The latest jobs report has many people talking about full employment and the fact that America is allegedly near this state. However, what does full employment really mean, and is our nation truly almost to this place? Analysis from Rob Wilson, president of Employco USA, an HR outsourcing firm. Rob, how do you see it?
The unemployment numbers actually went up a little bit this past month with the new job numbers, but we're not at full employment yet, but we're getting closer.
What would that mean, full employment, numerically, I guess?
Numerically, it'll never be zero, but typically the rule of thumb, a lot of people look at it once you're in that 3.5 to 4%, which is close to where we're at. We went from 3.9 to 4.0 last week.
So you're saying that the phrase is being incorrectly used right now. Explain.
Well, typically, because of the way the economy is now, you know, if you're coming off the recession, you got the new tariffs, you know, you still have, as good as the economy is, we're still able to throw out some pretty good new job numbers, 213,000 last month, so which is great news. But usually with that, you also, when you're at full employment, you usually see a lot larger significant wage growth, and you really haven't seen that yet. Unemployment numbers are low. You're still coming off, part of the unemployment numbers that was coming off the recession, that the people that stopped looking for jobs, they stopped being a statistic. So there's still people out there that aren't working.
Mm. All right, so it's been said that we have more job openings than people to fill them. But if we're not getting wage growth now, are we going to? Or the kind of wage growth we want, I guess?
It depends on the level. So you're seeing minimum wage increases across the country. So you see California moving to 15 in different areas. Chicago just went up another dollar July 1st. So you're going to see minimum wage, which then is going to have a ripple effect up, you know, as it went from 10 to eventually 15. If you were making 15 before, now you're going to say, well, if I'm not minimum wage. If I was at 15, now I want to be at 20. So you're going to see that ripple effect up. And as jobs become more and more competitive, you will see the wage levels increase on all levels. And at that point, a combination of that and your underemployment, the people that were, you know, only working 29 hours because the companies didn't want to pay them health insurance and keep them under that, as the health insurance rules change, underemployment will change as well.
Hmm. We're speaking with Rob Wilson. He's the president of Employco USA. They're an HR outsourcing firm, and we're talking about full employment. Rob says we're not there. You point out, too, you said we need to be careful to keep rapid wage growth under control. Otherwise, we might face a brand new set of problems. Like what?
You're finding great people has always been an issue for as you're recruiting. But if you have rapid growth of wages, it's going to, you know, a combination of that and inflation, your cost of goods, whatever product or service you sell, is going to go up because the wages are such a part of that. And what effect will that have on the economy? Will that actually slow the economy down as wages are up and overall prices of products increase as well?
The current path we're on with, say, wage growth and hiring, how much longer is this sustainable? Can we expect more or better from this?
I'm thinking 6 to 9 months at this pace. As you're getting into more inflation, then you're going to see the Feds increase the interest rates possibly a little bit quicker. But I think you've got six to nine months. Outside of the underemployed, you also have the people that are working jobs that I was laid off from my job. I was an engineer, and now I'm working at Home Depot in the lumber department. But the job market's back, and so you're going to see some of that shift as well.
Very good. Are there any kind of underpinnings here that nobody's talking about that we need to pay more attention to?
Well, the economy's very strong now, even with all the talk of tariffs. But the question is, when does the economy start to falter or drop? We pre-election a couple years ago, was everyone thought we were going to be in a recession in 17, and the economy's going strong in the middle of 18. So how long do you sustain it? That's the question for a crystal ball.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Wilson, president of Employco USA. 21 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if you've ever thought to yourself how arbitrary it sometimes seems after you get pulled over, whether or not you're issued a summons for your misdeed, you're not alone. Now raise those stakes from a ticket to you possibly being arrested, and you can see why officials in Georgia are not happy with two officers who have been suspended after they used a coin toss to decide whether to arrest a 24-year-old motorist they stopped for speeding. According to police in Roswell and video footage of the incident that has surfaced, the officer stopped the motorist in April when she was running late for work at an Atlanta hair salon and sped past them at around 80 miles per hour on a wet road. The two female police officers then discussed whether to give motorist Sarah Webb a speeding ticket or arrest her for reckless driving. They decided to flip a coin to decide it. Heads, arrest; tails, release. One of the officers used a coin flip app on her mobile phone, and the flip went against Webb. The officers then giggled about the result and began to write up charges.
Wow.
And now they're going to be staying home for a while,
ooh,
it appears.
Wow.
They've both been suspended for that.
Well, I suspect at times it does simply come down to with the odds of a coin toss, whether
right.
or not you get something like that.
Right, right. Well, that's
and let's be clear. The motorist deserved either one.
Right. Well, yeah, at least something, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, it does seem, you know, if you get pulled over, it sort of it depends on a lot of things, right? It depends on sort of how you sort
your
of respond.
Attitude.
Your attitude and sort of the mood of the officer that particular day and what kind of charges previously you might have had on your license, that kind of thing. So there are a lot of sort of factors that go into this. I guess this isn't all that different from any of those factors, but just the fact that it was so blatant. And again, the difference between, I guess, a ticket and an arrest, that's kind of a big difference.
Yeah, I should rephrase that. I'm not sure that speeding like that requires or
right.
I don't know, might suggest an arrest.
I guess it's possible. I mean, I guess they couldn't have just done it unless it was possible, you know, sort of the way things were structured.
Wow.
But not good. That was caught on video.
I would not have wanted to be on the receiving end of that.
Right.
Coin flip. Yeah.
Exactly. And while most of us won't have to make this choice, Gordon, we might be able to sympathize with the conundrum faced by this driver. If you pay several $100,000 for a high-performance sports car, you'd like to be able to stretch its legs once in a while. Unfortunately, you'd also like to have it for more than one day before wrapping it around a tree. That's what happened to a Virginia man who totaled his $300,000 car just one day after he bought it. The Fairfax County Police Department shared info about the wreck on Facebook Saturday, saying a man driving a McLaren 720S crashed into a tree because he was speeding. The post, which has since gone viral, included a photo of the mangled car. Thankfully, the injuries to the driver were not life-threatening, though he was taken to the hospital. The department posted a warning along with the photo, purchased Friday, totaled Saturday. A reminder to slow down, or it could cost you.
Man.
So there we go, another speeding story.
Man.
You see sort of the end result of the speeding situation,
ugh.
Right? But yeah, $300,000. But yeah, what do you do, right? You buy a car like that. You can't. You don't want to drive 55 when you buy a car like that.
You got to open the throttle a little bit, right?
At least a little bit. He just got it, right? So he wanted to sort of test it out a little bit, obviously.
Holy
and probably, you know, maybe he couldn't handle it. Maybe needed a few more lessons before doing that.
I think if I had a car like that, I'd go out on a Sunday morning when it was sunny.
Yeah.
Maybe about 25 miles an hour.
Right.
Around the neighborhood.
Right,
and
exactly.
Quickly put it back in the garage with a tarp over it.
Right, park it way in the back of the parking lot someplace where nobody can touch it. Yeah.
Did he have insurance? That's the question.
Yeah.
That is the question. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us and welcome into Monday. The office air conditioning wars are here. A recent survey by CareerBuilder finds that almost half of workers complain that their office is either too hot or too cold, with 15% of employees admitting to arguing with a coworker about the temperature in the office. Moneyish.com says a difference in how men and women traditionally dress for work in the summer is part of the problem. Men have typically a pants, shirt, and jacket, while women may have just a sleeveless dress and perhaps open-toed shoes. Moneyish.com tells the story of a freelance writer and author named Lori Endicott Thomas, who says her fingers were literally blue while she was working in an office back in the 90s. She had circulatory problems, which meant her extremities would get cold very easily, yet a coworker kept turning the temperature down. One day she was so cold she couldn't type, and when she checked the thermostat, a coworker had set it to 50 degrees. She complains. It eventually got resolved when an HVAC guy came and made some adjustments. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Trump says his meeting with Russia's Vladimir Putin will go fine. Trump made the prediction today at a breakfast in Helsinki, where he was meeting with Finland's president hours before his highly anticipated summit with Putin. Trump's meeting with Putin comes 3 days after special counsel Robert Mueller indicted a dozen Russian intelligence officers on charges of hacking into Democratic Party servers in 2016. White House National Security Advisor John Bolton was asked on ABC if he believed Putin didn't know about Russian election meddling.
I find it hard to believe, but that's what one of the purposes of this meeting is, so the president can see eye to eye with President Putin and ask him about it.
On the eve of his meeting with Putin, Trump rattled allies once more by labeling the European Union a foe with regard to trade. Footage released from an officer's body-worn camera shows that a man killed by Chicago police had a gun in a holster at his hip and was shot multiple times as he ran away, spun around, and reached toward his waist. Superintendent of the police Eddie Johnson says he hopes the video helps to dispel rumors that 37-year-old Harith Augustus was unarmed.
These things happen in a split second, and officers have to make decisions quickly. They don't have the luxury of looking at video later.
Protesters angry about the killing took to the streets Saturday in a city that struggled with police shootings. The California Democratic Party has voted to endorse a progressive state senator over incumbent Senator Dianne Feinstein for the U.S. Senate in the party's executive board meeting. Though Feinstein beat state Senator Kevin DeLeon by 33 points in the jungle primary last month, progressive grassroots activists has pushed for a more liberal candidate to take on the Trump administration. This is the second time they've elected to endorse DeLeon over the 85-year-old Feinstein. There's a new movie at the top of the box office chart. Hotel Transylvania 3 Summer Vacation is number one with $44.1 million in its first weekend in theaters. Number two was Ant-Man and the Wasp, and it was a disappointing debut for Dwayne Johnson's Skyscraper, which earned only $25.5 million.
Wow, what happened to The Rock?
I know, and it costs $125 million to make it or something.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, uh-oh.
Yeah. If you're not chunking it on weekend one,
yeah,
you're probably not clawing back those costs.
Agreed, yeah.
Jeez. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. A small Finnish craft brewery is paying a humorous tribute to the Helsinki summit. RPS Brewing has issued a limited edition lager depicting cartoon U.S. and Russian presidents on its label, with text for Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin saying, quote, "Let's settle this like adults," and quote, "making lager great again." The Associated Press says the beer has been in high demand since it hit the shelves nationwide in Finland a few days ago, and the whole 10,000-bottle lot had been sold out ahead of today's meeting. Samples have also been delivered to the U.S. and Russian embassies in Helsinki. The CEO told the AP that a couple of good beers can help any negotiations, especially if followed by a visit to a Finnish sauna. The name of the brewery, by the way, is actually Rock, Paper, Scissors, another potential way to settle things. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.